Hi, I'm Rena Jenkins, and you're listening to my contribution for Podfic Awareness Week 2012, or Podaware, as all the cool kids call it, for the topic, How We Podfic. I could talk a little bit about how I physically podfic, how I'm currently laying on my stomach in bed, talking to the built-in microphone in my 2006 MacBook using a version of GarageBand that's, like, a couple years old now. I probably should update that. Or I could talk about how I consume Podfic, listening to it when I'm doing things like going for walks around the neighborhood, or riding the bus, or right before bed, or any time I have yarn. But I don't know. I guess when I heard the topic, how we Podfic, I kind of had this idea of, like, one of those behind-the-scenes shows on the History Channel or the Food Network, where they show you how something is made, and it's like, ooh, a look behind the curtain. So I thought, instead of talking about the boring stuff, I'd show you, the listener, a little peek behind the scenes. When I make Podfic, I usually edit as I go. I mean, I've heard from a lot of people that this is actually a lot easier in GarageBand than it is in Audacity, because you have to do things like realign noise levels and things like that in Audacity. But with GarageBand, if you noticed you said something egregiously wrong, like, you know, the wrong word or the wrong character's name or super weird inflections, you can stop and just highlight and delete and start over again. And most of the time, like 85% of the time, that's what I do. I just get it all done at once, and then any other editing after that is for, like, technical things. Any other editing or beta listening is for buzzing or just stuff that I fell asleep instead of editing through. But there's that other 15% of the time when I'm just like, oh, fuck it. I don't want to press buttons. I'm just going to turn the camera on and or turn the microphone on and let it do its thing. And most of the time, what falls on the cutting room floor is weirdness, like me clearing my throat. But sometimes it's, I think they're funny. So, I have a couple little bits of cutting room floor clippings to share with you guys. First up is from the Podfic Acceleration. Story was written by Helen78, and I recorded this for the Car Race AU Bingo Square earlier this past summer. They're way off the beaten path by the time they get where they're going. Charles has no idea where they've ended up. But they're not... Ew, excuse me. She comes off the car and puts her hand on Eric's arm, leaning up. We'll see you later. Come on, Eric says to Charles, pulling him away. What is with the burping? Diamond form?
Formal?
I'm Alex. Armando said Eric was going to try and get you out to one of these things eventually.
Meh.
Everyone has some advantage in a race, Eric confirms. Okay, this is weird. This pacing just got weird. I could try to help with that. Ugh, what the hell is with the burping today? Sebastian, this is Charles Xavier, my partner. Charles, this is Sebastian Shaw.
Bleh! Word vomit.
He'll never touch it, Eric grits out. Feel free to fantasize.
I wish he wouldn't, Charles thinks. Eric squeezes his hand again.
Bleh, Eric thinks, kissing Charles harder. His hand... None are forthcoming, so he tugs his jacket up and uses his sleeve to wipe off some of the cum. Charles, blah, 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 blah.
Charles does his best to set his clothes to rights. Sometime. Not now. Charles takes Eric's hand and moves it up a little higher. I can't wait. Charles takes Eric's hand and moves it up a little higher. And moves it up a little higher. And he doesn't relax until Shaw stops caressing the metal and turns around, facing both the drivers. He takes a white silk handkerchief out of his pocket, holds both arms to his sides. Both Emma and Eric rev their engines, waiting for the signal to go. The Corvette jerks and slams Charles against the... See how you like it, he thinks, and grabs for... All right, hang on, I have to pause and get a drink. Emma's Aston Martin roars up alongside them, on Charles' side now, and then it's on them. Ew.
Good,
Eric growls. Good, Eric growls. Good.
Good.
Good. She faints at Eric's car again. Armando reaches out the window to exchange fist bump with Eric. That's what Charles needed to hear, out loud, where it isn't just fleeting, isn't just a wish that might never be a reality. Okay, why can't I read the words that are right in front of me?
So yeah, that was some of the weirdness of my verbal flubs for that podfic. Aren't you glad you listened through the whole thing? Next up, I have some more bloopers, this time from Patrick Stump's Strip Joint, a story written by Sunset Mog and recorded by me during Amplificathon 2012. With this one, I had some trouble even with my intro, as you're about to hear. This is Patrick Stump's Strip Joint, or The One Where They're All Strippers, a band of fanfic featuring members of Panic at the Disco and Fall Out Boy. Written by Sunset Mog and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG and contains a pre-Brendan Spencer, pre-Patrick Pete pairing-ish thing. Patrick's pretty damn gay, but he's fairly sure if he was sitting by the stage and Ryan wiggled his bony ass in Patrick's face, then he'd be inclined to go back to women. Ryan also refuses to listen to anything Pete tells him in dance rehearsals. Ryan is what Pete terms interpretive, and what Patrick privately terms. Patrick always, always keeps his desk drawer locked. Patrick always, always keeps his desk drawers locked. Ryan, Patrick thinks as he starts to crochet another square for his woolen blanket, is the worst stripper in the history of bad strippers. And Patrick can remember back to the time 3 years ago when everyone had gotten food poisoning and he'd ended up on stage pulling off his t-shirt. And Patrick can remember... Patrick keeps saying that he would let Ryan go if it wasn't for the fact that people weren't exactly lining up around the block to get it. Secretly, though, it's because Pete's sworn that he'll quit too if Patrick fires Ryan. And even if Pete is one of the most annoying human beings Patrick's come across, even Patrick can't deny that he's got a flair for choreographing. Once Ryan's finished with his expressionist monologue about the future of humanity, it's Brendan's turn to take the stage. Once Ryan's finished with his expressionist monologue about the future of humanity, it's Brendan's turn to take the stage. To take to the stage. Trevor. Because he can hear Brendan's whoops through the wall. Brendan uses the whole stage, and he's energetic and enthusiastic, and more than one of Patrick's strip joints. Shen doesn't give anyone a moment to get a word in edgewise. He talks too much. The crowd always cheers loudly when he finishes his routine. The crowd always cheer loudly when he finishes. Blah, 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 blah. Sometimes Patrick thinks that he likes John more than he likes Brendan, but that's only because John doesn't break so many things as Brendan does, or run around him like a hyperactive kid on speed. Brendan messes with Patrick's stitch count. Anyway, most of the customers looked so dazed. John has the potential to be a better stripper than Brendan, but Patrick's weird pauses in the middle of your sentence will not add emphasis but confuse the listener. Although, even the regulars still tend to verge towards being overwhelmed when they realize they're watching a bearded man take his clothes off to a soundtrack that's comprised almost entirely of Jack Johnson. John doesn't have a routine, so to speak. Sometimes he just... John doesn't have a routine, so to speak. Sometimes he just sits on the floor and undoes his shoelaces until the end of the first chorus. After the last time, Patrick had insisted that he switch to something which might not double knot. He had slipped John an extra $100 to switch to Velcro. Oh god, this is such a... Okay. So Mikey's left filling the gap with whatever MP3 he's got on hand. He's been known just to plug his iPod into the sound system. He's been known just to plug his iPod into the sound system. A stoned, bearded man hopping across the stage while trying to get out of a pair of jeans. This is the best mental image. That particular experience had led to Patrick taking up cross stitch. He picked up a few sets from the craft section in Target, and he's... Oh my god, this is going to be terrible. I can't keep a straight face. Patrick's worst nightmare had come true. Patrick's worst nightmare had come true when... Patrick's been trying to get Pete to have a word with Spencer about it, but it's never done any good. Not really. Patrick's worst nightmare had come true when come true. Patrick sighs. Pete's probably right. Until then, though, Patrick's taking up stenciling. And finally, after listening through all of that, we have some bloopers from the Avengers fic, The Shoes Make the Woman, written by Cleo JLH, and recorded by me for Day of Femslash, which was also earlier this past year. This one's got... Yeah, it was really weird. I think I spent more time in bloopers for this podfic than actual runtime of the podfic. Ready? This is The Shoes Make the Woman. an Iron Man Avengers fanfiction, written by Cleo J.L.H. and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13, contains some minor spoilers for The Avengers and for Iron Man, both movies, and contains the pairing Pepper Potts, Natasha Romanoff, with additional tags for Foot Fetish, Community Kink Bingo, Shoes, Office, Undercover, Humor, Romance Flirting, and Manicures and Pedicures. Author's Note. Fulfills the shoe foot fetish square on my kink bingo card. So many thanks to Allie Wildgoose for giving it a once-over. To see her in the hallways at S.H.I.E.L.D. or in the field, one would suppose that the majority of Natasha's covert ops placed her in under... To see her in the hallways at S.H.I.E.L.D. or in the field, one would suppose that the majority of Natasha's covert ops placed her in underground subcultures of one kind or another. Her attire tended to favor black and leather, with flat-heeled boots, even when she wasn't in her Black Widow field suit. And indeed, she had infiltrated a murderous motorcycle gang, a shady BDSM club selling information about its clients, and for a while had sung in a rock band. But Natasha was also quite good at portraying a young, super-competent corporate worker on the make. Superficially professional blouses that might come unbuttoned at any time. Plus intelligence and a general enthusiasm for whatever topic was under discussion. Superficially professional blouses that might come unbuttoned at any time. Plus intelligence and a general enthusiasm for whatever topic was under discussion was more than enough to seduce the entrepreneurial or corporate male. With women, Natasha had struggled at first, until she found the great leveler. Shoes. And it didn't work only with the stereotypical Carrie Bradshaw-like Manolo freak either. Women were also enamored of their brightly covered Chuck Taylors, their tough combat boots, their sweet ballet flats. Those in naturalizer Oxfords. With women, Natasha had struggled at first. Until she found the great leveler. Shoes. And it didn't work only with the stereotypical Carrie Bradshaw-like Manolo freak either. And it didn't work only with the stereotypical Carrie Bradshaw-like Manolo... The great leveler. Shoes. And it didn't work only with the stereotypical Carrie Bradshaw-like Manolo freak either. Women were also enamored of their brightly colored Chuck Taylors, their tough combat boots, their sweet ballet flats. Those in naturalizer Oxfords or stretch-laced ergonomic walking shoes liked to be complimented on their practicality. Shoes didn't carry the body image minefield that clothing did. They were the universal app. So, at the start of her second week... Okay, take two. Excuse me. To see her in the hallways at S.H.I.E.L.D. or in the fields, one would suppose that the majority of Natasha's covert ops... Why am I reading so fast? Take 17 million. This is The Shoes Make the Woman, an Iron Man Avengers movie-verse fanfiction, written by Cleo J.L.H. and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13. Contains the pairing Pepper Potts, Natasha Romanoff. Why can't I breathe? It's my one extravagance. She turned her ankle, and Natasha saw a flash of a red sole. Those are real Louboutins? She asked, looking excited. You want to try them on? Pepper asked, stepping out of her pumps. Could I? Natasha asked, hopping up from her desk and slipping off her own shoes. You're so tiny, you'll probably be slipping. You're so tiny, you'll... Could I? Could I? Natasha asked. You want to try them on? You're so tiny that you'll... You're so tiny, you'll probably be swimming in them. They were a little large. Okay. If I were asked by the Pepper Potts to try on her fantastic Louboutins, I'd be super excited. So Natasha's super excited. And then Pepper's saying, I have big feet, but she's saying it as a compliment. So how does she say that? She says it. They were a little large, but now with Natasha in heels and Pepper in her stocking feet, they were nearly the same height. She hadn't noticed before the deep blue of Pepper's eyes, or that her makeup didn't cover the freckles on her cheeks. Her cheeks, is she part chicken? He wears a little heel himself sometimes, though I think that's less about being taller than he thinks. Pepper waved her hand. Mr. Stark has dated far too many models to care about that. He wears a little heel himself sometimes, though I think that's less about being taller than that he thinks it makes his behind look good. She rolled her eyes. Natasha saw Pepper glance at the old but well-cared-for shoes she'd kicked off. They were her favorites for undercover corporate ops. Modest, with a T-strap so she could run in them and... Okay, a girl stops podficking for a week, and what happens? She can't read words! The key to a successful corporate op was to be privy to the office gossip, but never be its subject. Aloud, she said, Oh, I'm still wearing my interview shoes. I was thinking of getting some new ones to celebrate the new job, but there are so many boutiques out there. But there are so many boutiques out here. Tell you what, Pepper said, cocking her head. We have to come in on Saturday morning. I can read the words. Why can't I say them? Aloud, she said. Oh, I'm still wearing my interview shoes. I was thinking of getting some new ones, celebrate the new job. But there are so many boutiques out here. Tell you what, Pepper said, cocking her head. We have to come in on Sunday morning for that APAC status call. I was going to get a spa pedicure afterwards. Why don't you come along? We have to come in on Sunday morning for that APAC status call. I was going to go get a spa... Words. This is dumb. You've been doing good work, Nat. The last time Natasha had been in a spa this upscale, she was giving massages, waiting for a certain client to come in so she could relieve him of the documents he carried with him at all times. Along the way, however, she had to give 78 massages to strangers. She didn't touch another person for almost a month. Sitting in the spa chair was a rather different. Okay. So, I have a tongue. I can say things. Why is it being a shit? I have to warn you, I'm probably going to get a little incoherent before this is over, Pepper said. I love a foot massage. She placed her feet in the warm water. And hummed. Me too, Natasha replied, sliding further down in the spa chair. She glanced at Pepper, whose peepers Me too. Pepper and Natasha are both awesome. Why can't I get their voices? Pepper ordered them salads with grilled chicken and white wine, while Natasha picked out a pale pink shade that felt appropriate for Natalie. I have to warn you, I'm probably going to get a little incoherent before this is over, Pepper said. I love a foot massage. I love a foot massage. I love a foot massage.
I love a foot massage.
Pepper giggled again, and Natasha was glad for the first time for Clint's truly shitty taste in Mewtwo? Well, this one time at band camp? Oh, this one time at band camp? I love Allison Hannigan. Why can't I get that line down either? I would hope so. Or I'd insist on an embarrassing story from you in return. That line sucks. Well, this one time at band camp? Well, this one time at band camp. Dear Cleo, I like your story a whole lot, but right now it sucks. I would hope so, or I'd insist on an embarrassing story from you in return. Well, this one time at band... This one time at band camp? This one time at band camp. This one time at band camp? I haven't watched the movie in so long, I forgot the inflection. Well, this one time at band camp. Pepper giggled again, and Natasha was glad for the first time. Then, before she thought, she added, "Then we'll have to keep each other's secrets, won't we?" Pepper replied. Natasha had nearly convinced herself that "Then we'll have to keep each other's secrets, won't we?" After it was over, or at least after all was revealed, Natasha told herself that she had a very good reason to go see Pepper, above and beyond the whole, "Now we'll sort of be working together, so..." After it was over. So when the assistant let her in, Natasha said, "Don't hold this against Phil. A man in his position doesn't have a lot of Natasha, feeling emboldened, sat down on Pepper's desk and crossed her legs. "I was wondering... Those boots are lovely," Pepper said, her eyes on Natasha's ankles. She blinked. "Sorry, I was distracted. What were you saying?" She extended her leg toward Pepper. "The leather is very soft." Okay, how do you do flirting with shoes voice? Do I have a flirting with shoes voice? I think I need a flirting with shoes voice. Natasha, feeling emboldened, sat down on Pepper's desk and crossed her legs.
Legs?
Reader's note. This podfic was recorded for the 2012 Kisses Anthology in celebration of this year's National Femslash National? Never mind. So yeah, that's a small sampling of the things that didn't make it into the final version of the podfic. You can find the final versions of these podfics at my live journal. Links will be provided in the post where you downloaded this, because I don't have them in front of me right now. Another thing I was thinking about when I was looking at the topic, how we podfic, is that sometimes you really, really want to podfic a story that doesn't exist yet. And I do this all the time. I'll be like, oh, this is a great thing, and then I'll whip out my handy-dandy Sansa clip and start telling the story that I want to podfic, only that I never get around to actually transcribing it and writing it down, because that's kind of a pain in the butt. So, and the other thing is also my little Sansa clip is not the best microphone out there. It tends to skip random words and stuff. It's very weird. But this happened to me one time a couple months ago while I was knitting a hat, because that's what you do with yarn. You're listening to podfic, and then you have an idea for a story you want to podfic, and then you turn your podfic that you're listening off, and you turn the microphone part of your MP3 player on, and then this happens. I apologize in advance for the weirdness of the audio quality. I was holding this thing about 2 inches from my mouth, and it picked up every breath sound and weird finger slip and everything like that. But yeah. So it appears that Betsy Boo's hat has accidentally developed some Natasha Bruce feels. Yeah, it started off kind of a Black Widow Hawkeye thing. And somehow it's like, surprise, added Bruce. And I think the way it works out is that it started out Clint and Natasha as their own thing. They're all together and stuff, because the movie left me with so many Clint Natasha feels. It was, you know, crazy. Because, you know, they have that whole, we do violence together, we, you know, can handle each other's ups and downs better than any other person on the team can. We have history together, and, you know, there's nothing more life-affirming than crazy sex after having just narrowly escaped explosion or whatever on their assassin ape is. So it's after the movie, and they're getting along, doing their thing. And Natasha has been really wary of Bruce this whole time. So she spent a lot of time, like, watching him. And, like, you know that part where she was talking to Clint in the movie about, like, she knows how to be unmade, she gets that? Like, she doesn't get Bruce, because most of the time he's, you know, a mild-mannered scientist with a little bit of a wit sometimes, whatever. Seriously, in order to go up against Tony Stark on a regular basis, you have to have a snarky tongue. But, she doesn't get him. She doesn't get how he can go from that to scare your fucking pants off green rage monster. And what she doesn't understand, she's a little bit scared of. But the thing is, like, she's made her living on not letting her fear rule her. That's how she does things like, you know, withstand torture and go undercover and assume personalities and shit like that and do the things she does. So she's not really good about letting that fear be expressed or whatever. It just makes her wary around Bruce. And then one of the things pointed out that when he is, you know, the other guy, he's an unstoppable force. But when Bruce isn't, he's kind of the weak link on the team. Yes, he's brilliant, but he doesn't have any arms training. He doesn't have any, like, physical prowess. Like, Tony does crunches and shit, you know, calisthenics and Pilates and stuff like that. And Steve has a super serum, and Thor is a freaking god. And Natasha and Clint both have their crazy badass assassin training to fall back on. But when Bruce isn't the other guy, he's basically the easiest one of all of them to take down. And when he is the other guy, he can't control it. You know, it's kind of like, point him in a direction and let him steamroll over everything. He doesn't really have the... It's like aiming a wrecking ball. You can make sure it knocks down the things in the general direction you point it, but you can't fine-tune, no fine motor control there. You can't knock down individual rooms. You can knock down the whole building, but you can't get like, oh, I just want to knock out this one window. Can't do that. So, Natasha points this out one day, because part of her way of dealing with the fear of his, you know, unrestrained rage, part of it is that, yeah, Natasha's angry all the time too, but she harnesses her rage. She steers it, and she hones it, and she makes it a weapon. She makes it something that she controls, whereas Bruce's other guy just lets it all flail all over the place. He just lets it out everywhere, and she doesn't like that, and she doesn't understand it, and it's alien to her. So that's part of what makes her really wary of him. The fact that he doesn't control it, it controls him, it snaps, and then it's gone. You know, like, his control is gone. He doesn't control the rage. So someone points out to Nick, Natasha points out to Nick one day at a meeting that, you know, when Bruce isn't the other guy, he is very easily the weakest link in the chain. So Clint gets volunteered to teach him some hand-to-hand stuff. And at first Bruce is like, no, I don't want to be in a setting where violence is a thing, because I don't want to accidentally trigger anything. I'm not good with failure, and I think I have a handle on this, but it's not, you know, put me in a situation where the other guy pops out by accident. I don't want to be involved with that. But somehow he gets, you know, cajoled, whined, prodded, and tricked into taking lessons with Clint, because, yes, Clint has his marksmanship and he has his flippy tricks, but Tony's fighting style is adapted for in the suit. Steve has the super serum, so, you know, his style is different. His muscles do different things. And Thor would accidentally punch him in the head, and then he'd be unconscious for the next 3 weeks. Whereas Clint is an average human. Yes, he has advanced training, but his muscles are average human muscles. So the fighting style that Clint has, which is a mostly evade and escape, turn your attacker's motions against him kind of deal, is good for Bruce. Enough to be able to let him get out of the way. You know, not, this is the kind of fighting where you're offensive all the time. This is the kind of fighting where you're defensive until you can get to higher ground, and then he can let the other guy out, you know? So that Bruce can defend himself in places where the other guy is not the best option. And then stuff happens. And Clint gets to spend more time with Bruce, and they get to talking, and Bruce's way of looking at the world grows on them. You know, Bruce is a scientist. He doesn't always see everybody in terms of, these are the 16 ways I could kill you with only moving two fingers and my left ankle kind of thing. He sees people in terms of altogether different viewpoint. And Natasha and Clint are a thing, and they're really happy together, whatever. But, Natasha's been watching them, because she doesn't get, like, that thing at the end of the movie where Bruce said, you know how I control it? I'm angry all the time. She doesn't get how he lives like that, because she's angry all the time, but she focuses it, and his is like this widespread, constant, broad spectrum kind of rage, and she doesn't get that. And careful watching slowly but surely turns into fascination, and for Clint, it's like, you know, boy bonding shit, and he teaches Bruce how to defend himself until he can get to the rest of the team or get to higher ground or whatever. He teaches him, conservation of energy kind of techniques and stuff like that. And he spends more time with him, and then he gets intrigued by Bruce because he has this, like, different viewpoint than the rest of them, because he's not an assassin. He's not a soldier. He's not a supplier of weapons or a war god. He is an academic. And it's through some quirks of fate that he even ended up on this team, but he's an academic. And Then maybe... I think there should be some soft feelings in there about, like, protecting Bruce and his viewpoint on the rest of the team, because his is a different view from the rest of the team, and Natasha, she is a little hesitant to bring it up to Clint at first, because, like, she's just sort of like, what's going on? Right, so Natasha's like, what do I say about this? Because she's still, like she's been watching him, and she's not sure how her feelings of softness or whatever, what's going on with that. And eventually it's like a lot of, you know, orbiting planets around each other kind of deal. They're hovering around each other, circling each other. And Bruce was totally the guy in high school who got picked on. He was the kid who did the academic decathlon and science research and AP physics and, you know, graduated early and shit like that. And has really, and he's not super great at decoding interpersonal signals, especially from two crazy killer assassin people around whom he's very nervous, because they're very, very different from him. The whole the kill you with my pinky thing going on, that's enough to make him nervous, especially since his and Natasha's first meeting were under less than ideal circumstances. She had 18 SHIELD agent guys hanging out outside the building where she had him cornered. And the first time he met Clint, the guy was under mind control, trying to blow shit up, and made the other guy come out. So not like the bestest of all first impressions. But, they've gotten better at working with each other. Not great, but better. And, Bruce is still sort of like, please don't hurt me, please don't hurt me. Even though they're his teammates, and, like, when the other guy comes out to play, he knows not to squish them or anything. But, yeah. So there's a lot of awkward hovering around each other, and then stuff. Mission goes bad, maybe. And, oh, maybe they get one of those maybe the bad guy has an inhibiting collar. Like, in X-Men, right? Doesn't let your mutation surface. And because Bruce is post-human. He's not a mutant or a metahuman, but it works the same. Doesn't let the other guy come out. And then, Bruce has to use some of the stuff that Clint taught him. And then, at the end of the fight, he's all, like, shaky and post-traumatic stressy, because when the other guy is doing the fighting, when he comes down from that, he doesn't always remember. He knows shit happened. But he doesn't always remember, like the first-hand, immediate, oh crap, I just ripped a guy in half kind of thing. It's like there's a buffer a little bit between, there's a bit of cottony vagueness between those memories and his immediate self. Because it's almost like, that's part of why he calls it the other guy, because it's like the memories belong to someone else. He's distanced from them, and then he doesn't always have to deal with them. But this time, he was there for the whole fight. It was Bruce Banner watching the violence. Bruce Banner being attacked. Bruce Banner perpetrating violence upon another in self-defense. Yes, self-defense, but yes, that was also his hand, his fist, his weapon firing. The bloodshed was at his movement. And the fight comes to an end, and they retreat back to Stark Tower. Because they're all living with Tony now. You know, that's what the Avengers do. They do badass, awesome things like live with Tony. And Bruce has no idea how to deal with this shit. He's, like, shaking in the bathroom, and he's completely freaking out because the adrenaline crash came, and for the first time, these memories of what happened are immediate, and there's the clarity and sharpness to these memories that he has no idea how to process. And for the first time in a really long time, he's actually grateful for the other guy, because that buffer that the other guy, that he gets after a fight when the other guy is present, so, so much better for dealing with this shit. Clint and Natasha end up coming into Bruce's bedroom and not finding him because the rest of the team is thinking about, like, ordering pizza and they want to know what Bruce wants on his food, you know? And they don't see him, but they hear the water running. So they walk in, Clint goes to stick his head in the bathroom door to see what's going on, and he sees Bruce all huddled up on the shower floor. Oh, because Tony has those glass doors on his showers. Like, they're kind of wavy, so you can't see details, but you can definitely see shapes. And Clint can see Bruce, like, holding his knees huddled on the floor in the bathroom. And it's not even like the air is steamy anymore from it being hot water. They left to surmise that Bruce has been there for quite a while holding his legs. And then Clint's like, Nat, remember we talked about that time coming undone? Well, I think it's starting to hit Bruce. So then the two of them huddle him out of the shower, and Natasha tells Jarvis, Bruce wants some pepperoni, but not right now. He's just gonna pass for a while. And Jarvis tells Tony, and Tony orders pizza for, you know, Thor and Steve and him, and then they will end up watching America's Next Top Model, because Tony thinks it's hilarious that Steve is like, why aren't those girls wearing clothes? What is that? That's not fashion. That's a tacky burlap sack. My mother sews nicer clothes than that. And Thor is like, competition, mightiest warrior. But then he also says things like, Sif could beat you with a tablecloth or whatever. You know, it's very, very Asgardian and humorous and shit. Thor's favorite part is on the catwalk. Tony's favorite part is watching Steve and Thor react to the in-house stuff while the girls are bitching at each other. It's hilarious. Tony also really likes Steve when Tyra comes on because Steve is just sort of meh. He doesn't understand her jokes or Miss J. Tony doesn't understand Miss J. It's the season with the giant poofy sleeves, and Steve is just sort of like, I don't understand how that's attractive. I don't understand why your giant poofy sleeves are attractive, Miss J. You confuse me. Anyway, so they're off doing half the Avengers team thing, and in the other half of the Avengers, Clint, Natasha, and Bruce are in Bruce's room, and they're cuddling. Because the best way to deal with post-traumatic shit is a lot of touching and letting Bruce know that the thing is over and that he got through it and that his team is there for him. And this snuggles and right, so cuddles and snuggles and Bruce waking up in a tangle of arms and legs and ankles and knees all everywhere, and he's in the middle of the pile, in the middle of his bed in Tony's Avengers mansion and in Stark Tower. And Bruce is kind of like, what? I think I put my own boxers on. And he's got Clint on one side and Natasha on the other. And yeah, he feels a hell of a lot better right now than he did, you know, at all last night. He's not great, but he's not shaking anymore, and that's, you know, super. That's definitely something he's glad he's not doing anymore. And he slowly kind of looks from side to side, and he sees Natasha, and he sees Clint, and he's... Bruce. I said Bruce, right? Not Tony. This is all Bruce. And he's like, what do we do now? Because, yeah, he is definitely getting along better with Clint and Natasha since he started training with Clint, and Natasha stopped walking on eggshells around him like he was going to explode into the other guy at any minute. But this is not something they do. You know, he's sort of like, wait. But of course, when he started moving back and forth, Natasha woke up right away because she is absolutely, you know, attuned to her surroundings and shit. And she sleeps with one eye open, kind of stuffed ninja assassin of awesome kind of thing. And then Bruce is like, hi, and thanks. And then Clint is awake too, and he's like, yeah, we need waffles. Come on, everybody, waffles. And then he sort of shivvies everybody out of the bed, and Bruce is like,
And he grabs a t-shirt, and Natasha's in yoga pants and a t-shirt, or a tank top. She doesn't wear t-shirts. She wears tank tops. And Clint is in his boxers, and he's just like, yeah, whatever. And they all go into the kitchen to make waffles. And it turns out Tony and Thor and Steve fell asleep on the sofa because it was not just one episode of America's Next Top Model. It was the entire season marathon. And they just, like, passed out in the middle of, episode 13? Whatever. Close to the end, but not the finale. So they missed the finale, and of course when they wake up, they're going to be cranky about that. So, so it's Bruce and Clint and Natasha, and they're sitting at the kitchen table, waiting for the Stark Engineering super crazy awesome waffle maker of awesome pants to run. Jarvis is going to beep when it goes. And there's like that kind of morning after feeling to it, except nothing happened. And they're all shooting glances at each other because Clint and Natasha are both kind of like, what is this thing that we are snuggling another person and not just ourselves? What is this fixing someone else, putting them back together when they've come undone? Mostly we just rely on each other for that, you know? And Bruce is like, this is weird. But he's also still a little bit jittery because, yeah, the memories are still kind of sharp from yesterday. And on the one hand, oh, thank God Clint taught him those things because otherwise he would have been smeared on the floor. But on the other hand, how do you say thank you from pulling me back from the panic attack I was having in the shower without, you know, admitting that you've still got this inhibitor collar on and the only reason you had a panic attack was because the other guy wasn't there to deal with it for you. So yeah, that's where I am right now. I'm about 2 inches done with your hat. Yeah, I've got at least another 8 inches until it's actually finished. So maybe there will be more of this story as it goes. But eventually it ends in a threesome with Natasha and Clint on either side of Bruce. And it's kind of like a trapezoid. It's kind of like a trapezoid. No, it's not. A tripod. It's kind of like a tripod, and each one of them does something to hold the other two up. And the thing is, Natasha and Clint had this relationship that worked. They each already kind of knew about the other's weaknesses and where the fault lines and fractures were that could, you know, these are the places that if too much stress is applied, he'll break, she'll fall apart, and these are the places where you need to keep pressure off, and these are the times when you need to put, like, an emotional band-aid out. So working around that, you know, trying to work Bruce into their threesome is kind of really, really hesitant because, you know, he's got his whole own mess of anger issues and rage issues and fuck my life issues to deal with, you know, that they don't know yet. And Bruce is sort of, how did I get sucked into this so far strictly platonic threesome of emotional codependency thing? You know, because Clint and Natasha are definitely there to help prop him up after fights. And Bruce is there to... He's really good at being analytical and soothing when someone's having a flashback, wake-up nightmare memory. And... Or when someone's like, this is not my day, or whatever. You know, when Clint's getting a little extra twitchy, when Natasha's starting to finger her electro glove a little bit more, her electrostatic shock thing, when she's, you know, thinking about punching Tony in the head or whatever, when she's starting to get that twitch in her fingers, when Clint starts reaching for his bow, Bruce notices. He's the academic noticing shit guy, so he notices. And, so nothing sexual, nothing straight out, yeah, I want to get naked with you, nothing like that. It's emotional porn. It's a lot of emotional porn and getting to know each other better, and they're still kind of hovering around each other a little bit, sort of orbiting each other, but at the same time, it's also supporting each other. It's also very tripodical. Whatever, shit. They're holding each other up. It's great. And, eventually there's another, fight mission that goes down, and something goes wrong, and stuff. Sex. Happens. Threesomes. Or something. Yeah. I haven't gotten that far yet. Okay, bye. Oh, I got it. Okay. So, they get back from a mission, and they go back to Bruce's room. Because that's what they do. They go back to Bruce's room after missions and cuddle. That's their thing. That's, like, how they all come down from whether or not the other guy showed up, whether either any one of them in particular was injured, or, you know, anybody in particular was singled out by the enemy, whether it was Dr. Doom or more of Loki's tricks or what have you. Even if it wasn't any one of them in particular being the focus of the bad guy, that's how they come down from it now. Ever since that first night, it became the precedent where everybody goes and they shower off and they come back in their pajamas or underwear and they cuddle pile on Bruce's bed and they snuggle together until the next morning and then they have waffles. Only this time, Natasha's just like, you know what? Why are we still doing this? Why is this strictly platonic? What is, like, dudes? I think, I already know that I like having sex with Clint, and we're both emotionally completely involved with Bruce, and, you know, we want to take care of you, and we want you to take care of us, and, naked times. Let's do that. Because Natasha's straightforward like that, you know? Less awkward pausing like I just had right there, because apparently coming up with dialogue on the fly is not something I'm good at. Whatevs. Oh god, I just said whatevs out loud. And there's a recording of me saying it twice now. Shit. So, Bruce is kind of like, you just smacked me in the back of the head with the fish. Naked times? But Clint is like, yeah, Natasha, you speak words of truth and awesomeness. So he starts wriggling out of his boxers. And Bruce is still like, are you serious? Because he's totally having flashbacks of those times in high school where he, you know, thought something was too good to be true and ended up getting swirlied. He doesn't think Natasha or Clint would do something like that. He's pretty sure, after all these months of circling each other and getting to know each other and emotionally holding each other up, that they're, you know, better than that. But at the same time, it's a hard, you know, habit to kick of expecting shit like that when that was the kid you were, you know, and that's the guy he is most of the time. He's not the crazy, bendy, deadly assassin. He's not the super awesome, flippy shit kind of guy like Clint is. So he doesn't expect things like this to happen to him all the time. But Natasha's wriggling out of her underwear, and Clint is digging through the bedside table for the condoms that Tony has in every room. Don't ask. And yeah. Bruce is like, oh, I guess we are doing this then. So he wriggles out of his underwear too, and there's touching, and there's some elbows in places that elbows don't go, because sure, they've kind of worked the three of themselves into a new stable shape emotionally. They've worked themselves into this new organism of the three of them, depending on each other emotionally, but this is still their first time together as the three of them, and having an orgy is awkward. You gotta figure out where to put extra arms and legs and, you know, dicks and mouths and stuff. So there's that. There's definitely some awkwardness between the three of them. But at the same time, it's also, you know, hot. Definitely hot. Bruce is like, yeah, I can appreciate this, the aesthetic of these two people in my bed. Yes, I can. And Clint is like, Natasha, you have some really great ideas. And Natasha is like, Hey, I like this plan. I am a straightforward person of awesomeness and go-get-itude. So, eventually, there's some rolling and some laughing and some sweating and some messing up of bedsheets and, hands and mouths and hickeys and stuff. And the next morning, Bruce wakes up in the middle of a cuddle pile again. Arms and legs and ankles and knees in places that he doesn't quite remember putting them. Only this time, he doesn't have his boxers on. So, yeah. And he looks back and forth between Clint and Natasha. And he's sort of like, oh, okay. Oh boy, this is that first day all over again. How do I get out of the bed without waking up the two assassins? And Natasha, she woke up when he moved and she's looking at him. And Clint wakes up and he looks at the two of them. And he says, you know what this needs? This needs waffles with whipped cream. And just like that, they fall back into their pattern that they established all these months before. Only this time, now there's that, not just the emotional porn, there's also the porny porn. Only I don't do porn. I'm not really super great at writing it. I can read it with the best of them, but, you know, coming up with myself, not so much. So, yeah. So, Bruce and Natasha and Clint, they're a thing now. And, yeah, this entire thing is the fault of your hat. Yeah. And I've still got 80 inches to go. Crap. This is gonna get bigger, isn't it?
So, thanks for listening to all of this. I don't know if it was actually worth your while, but, I mean, thanks for looking behind the curtain with me. It's not so glamorous, but yeah, this is sort of the dirty bits that get swept under the rug before you get the shiny podfic that you listen to. And I know there's going to be a whole bunch of other really excellent podfic posts going on today and all week. So make sure you check out the rest of the PodAware podcasts and posts and podfics and awesomeness. Thanks for listening to this. Feel free to look me up at rena-jenkins.livejournal.com or Rena Jenkins at the AO3 or Rena Jenkins, all one word, at Twitter. Yeah, let's chat. Let's talk about podfic. It'll be super fun. I'm very friendly. Thanks for listening, and have a nice day, guys. Bye.